Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. At this time, we'd like to welcome everyone to Braskem's non-audited fourth quarter and full year 2016 earnings conference call. Today with us, we have Fernando Mussa, CEO, Pedro Freitas, CFO, and Pedro Teixeira, IR, Controller, and Project Finance Director. We'd like to inform you that this event is being recorded, and all participants will be in a listen-only mode during the company's presentation. After Braskem remarks are completed, there will be a question-and-answer section. At the time, further instructions will be given. Should any participant need assistance during this call, please press star zero to reach the operator. We have simultaneous webcast that may be accessed through Braskem's IR website at www.braskem-ir.com.br and the Engage X platform, where the slide presentation is available for download. Please feel free to flip through the slides during the conference call. There will be a replay facility for this call on the website. We remind you that questions which will be answered during the Q&A session may be posted in advance on the website. Before proceeding, let me mention that forward-looking statements are being made under the safe harbor of the Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1996. Forward-looking statements are based on the beliefs and assumptions of Braskem management and on information currently available to the company. They involve risks, uncertainties, and assumptions because they relate to future events and therefore depend on circumstances that may or may not occur in the future. Investors should understand that general economic conditions, industry conditions, and other operating factors could also affect the future results of Braskem. It could cause results to differ materially from those expressed in such forward-looking statements. Now, I'll turn the conference over to Pedro Teixeira, IR, Controller, and Project Finance Director. Mr. Teixeira, you may begin your conference.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for participating in the conference call of Braskem to discuss the results of the fourth quarter 2016 and the full year of 2016. The company informed its shareholders and the market that it has decided to postpone to March 29, 2017, the filing of its audited financial statements related to the fiscal year of 2016. Due to the conclusion of the global settlement with the authorities announced on December 21st, 2016, the company has been conducting necessary analysis of its internal process and controls, which has impacted the progress of external auditors' work. In order to keep the market informed and on its operational and financial performance, Braskem decided to proceed with a release of its non-audited results, which are, of course, subject to adjustments and changes upon the release of the company's final audit financial statements. Beginning the presentation on slide number four, we'll discuss about the highlights for the Brazilian operations of Braskem. In Brazil, the demand for the resin, PE, PP, and PVC reached 1.2 million tons in the fourth quarter, 13% higher than the fourth quarter of 2015, and a decrease of 6% in comparison with the third quarter of 2016 due to the regular seasonality of the period. In 2016, the total demand reached 4.9 million tons, 1% lower than in 2015. The average cracker utilization rate for 2016 reached 92%, 3 percentage points higher than the last year, and it was an historical record for the company. In terms of sales in domestic market, the company achieved in 2016 3.3 million tons of resin sold in the domestic market, 1% lower than in the last year due to the demand retraction in 2016. In terms of exports, 2016 was a year of record. We increased the exports of the company by 24% comparing 2016 with 2015, mainly in the first semester of the year. We exported 1.7 million tons of resins in the whole year. In terms of EBITDA, the operations in Brazil achieved an EBITDA in 2016 of 8.5 million billion reais, which accounts for 74% of the consolidated segments of the company. Moving to slide number five, I would like to highlight and discuss in more details about the graph that appears in the low side of this slide. So from the left to the right, we have the evolution of the EBITDA in the operations in Brazil. We achieved an average EBITDA margin around 17% in the whole year. The margin was a bit lower in the fourth quarter, mainly due to the regular seasonality in the fourth quarter, which is usual weaker than the other quarters. But also there were some very non-recurring events, punctual events that happened in the fourth quarter. We had a provision of environmental provision of 180 million reais. We have a process and we have to maintain our provisions updated, and we updated it, the environmental provisions in the fourth quarter in the amount of 880 million reais, which caused some difficulty to compare the results of the fourth quarter with the other quarters of 2015. Another important point to highlight is the evolution of the spread, which is the graph that appears on the lower right side of the slide. The international spread that affects Brazil, there was a decrease by 13% in the fourth quarter, mainly driven by the fact that the naphtha price increased from $365 per ton to $422 per ton, and it was a reaction of the naphtha price as a consequence of higher oil price. This led to a decrease in the spread, international spread, that affected results, the spread in Brazil. Moving on to slide number six, and here we are going to discuss the results of our U.S. / Europe business and also our Mexico complex. In U.S. and Europe, the average utilization rate in 2006 was 100%, 2 percentage points higher than 2015. We had in the fourth quarter of 2016 a scheduled shutdown, maintenance shutdown in one of our facilities in Marcus Hook, Pennsylvania, and this caused a reduction on this quarter of the utilization rate to 95%, which is still a very good, very high level. In terms of volumes, in this quarter, there was a decrease by 3% compared with the fourth quarter of 2015, especially because of the shutdown in the facility in Marcus Hook. In 2015, the total amount sold in Europe and of products produced in Europe and U.S. reached 2 million tons, 2% higher than in the last year, with a great operational performance and strong demand, especially in U.S. In terms of EBITDA, the fourth quarter accounted for an EBITDA of $103 million, equivalent to 340 million reais. And in total, in the full year of 2016, U.S. and Euro represented $696 million, which is equivalent to around 20% of the consolidated segments of the company. In Mexico, we achieved a higher utilization rate in our PE facilities. We achieved 73% of utilization rate, which is 10 percentage points higher than in the third quarter, 2016. We had a maintenance in our facilities of our ethane supplier, and even though with these maintenance in the facilities our zinc suppliers, which led to a lower utilization rate in our facilities in October. The average was still pretty much higher than what was the rate for the third Q 2016. In the year, the utilization rate stood at 42%, which was in line with the ramp-up schedule that we planned for the complex for the year. In terms of sales, PE, we sold in 2016 432,000 tons, and of which 46% was channeled to the Mexican market, and the rest was exported to several other destinies, including Asia, Europe, Central America, and U.S. The EBITDA generated by Mexican project in 2016 was $165 million, and taking consideration that the average utilization rate of the year was 42%. Moving to the next slide, it shows with a bit more detail the results in U.S. and Europe. On the graph on the up right side, it shows that there was a contraction in the spreads in U.S. by 5%, with an increase in the propylene prices in U.S. There was some restriction in terms of supply of ethane in this last two quarters. But overall, we consider that the market is oversupply in terms of propylene, and we expect that the spreads recover again over the next year, next quarter. In terms of EBITDA, the EBITDA of this quarter was lower because of the contraction in the spreads, and of course because of the maintenance shutdown that that happened in Marcus Hook, in our facility in Marcus Hook. In Mexico, moving to slide number 8, we are bringing here a slide that shows the operational rate month after month. And let's begin to look in this graph in October, where we achieved a smaller operational rate of 44%. And this was achieved, such a lower rate was because there was a stoppage for maintenance in our supplier. So with this stoppage for maintenance in our supplier, we used this time to also stop our facilities, make some adjustments, and improve the capacity of the company. So with that, we were able to quickly recover and achieve very much high utilization rates, and especially in December when we achieved an operational rate of 97%, which is very much important. Less than 1 year after the startup of the project, we are able to say that we achieved very high utilization rates in the Mexican project, which made us very anxious for what we are going to see for 2017. In terms of sales, sales are growing gradually and following the production. So in the fourth quarter, we sold around 200,000 tons, part of that in Mexico, part of that exported. And just reinforced the EBITDA margin of this project. So in the fourth quarter 2016, we achieved an EBITDA margin of 48%, much higher than any other region that Braskem acts. That's because it's a gas-based project. That's because we have a very competitive feedstock agreement for this complex. So moving on to the slide number 9, that here we are going to talk about the consolidated results of the quarter and the year. On the quarter, we achieved an EBITDA of $730 million. And in the quarter, in terms of dollars, we reached $3.3 billion and 11.5 billion reais. In both cases, there was important increase compared to the last year, and in both cases, we achieved a record EBITDA of the company. This was due to good operational performance in all units, healthy resins and basic petrochemical spreads in the international market, very good performance in terms of exports from Brazil. Operational performance in U.S. and Europe were outstanding, and the Mexico project began to contribute to the overall results of the company. In December 2016, the company concluded a global settlement with authorities in the context of a car wash operation. And under this global settlement, the company will pay to the applicable authorities in Brazil and U.S. and Switzerland an amount of $967 million, equivalent to 3.1 billion reais. The financial leverage, the leverage of the company measured by the net debt to EBITDA ratio in U.S. dollars, ended the year at 1.67 times. And considering the effect of the global settlement with the authorities, the leverage stood at 1.95 times. So in both cases, any way you measure this ratio, the ratio is very much comfortable, very much lower in terms of leverage than what we had like 2 to 3 years ago. Moving to slide number 10, here is a comparison of this EBITDA of 2015 and 18 and 16 in U.S. dollars. So last year we had $2.8 billion. And by several reasons, FX, spreads, volume, greater margin, and the contribution of the Mexican project, we were able to achieve a much greater EBITDA in 2016. It was an increase year over year of 18%. Moving to slide number 11, here it shows the amortization schedule of the company and the leverage. We ended the year with a total cash position, cash and equivalent position of 7.3 billion reais. We also have available two standby credit facilities that of $750 million and 500 million reais, which leads to a total cash available for the company of 10.3 billion reais, which is sufficient to cover the debt service of around 35 months. The net debt of the company ended the year at $5.2 billion, and the EBITDA, the corporate EBITDA without the Mexican project reached $3.1 billion. As I said, the leverage ratios of the company are very much comfortable, and even with the announcement of the settlement and the penalty that the company will have to pay, all the three rating agencies reaffirmed the ratings of the company. So Braskem remains investment grade by Fitch and S&P, and above the sovereign rate in Moody's. Moving to the slide number 8, and the intention of the slide is to give a summary of the settlement. And everything began in March 2015, when allegations of improper payments related to feedstock agreement with Petrobras came to public. With that, the company initiated a voluntary and internal investigation that was back in April 2015. In July 2016, the company, there were allegations of new wrongdoings that the company received. And the company, from July 16 to October, the company worked to verify and to investigate these new allegations. And with the evidence of wrongdoings, the company initiated formal discussions, formal negotiations with the Brazilian and U.S. authorities. That was in October 2016. The company also made a tax adjustment, a voluntary one. That was back in November 2016. And finally, in December last year, we were able to close a global settlement with the authorities in U.S., Brazil, and Switzerland. And we are going to have to pay 3.1 billion reais, approximately 1.6 billion we will pay during the first and the second quarter of this year. Once we have the confirmation, the homologation of the ratification of the agreement with the authorities, and 1.5 billion reais will be paid to the federal prosecutors in Brazil in 6 annual installments adjusted by the IPCA, which is inflation index in Brazil, beginning in January 2018. An important point to reinforce is from the total amount, around 2.8 billion will be paid to the federal prosecutors in Brazil, and a relevant portion of that will be available to indemnify third parties for the damages caused by the wrongdoing. The status of the settlement in Brazil, it was approved by the Fifth Coordination and Review Chamber, which already produced civil effects. So it's still subject to homologation by the judge of the 13th Federal Branch in Curitiba. In U.S., the Department of Justice had taken its final decision in last January 2016. And SEC, we are still waiting for the final decision pending by the competent court, which we expect to happen pretty soon. And in Switzerland, the agreement is finalized, so no further action are required. The settlement requires some additional obligations. The company will have a monitorship during a period of 3 years that could be extended for 1 year more if necessary, and the company is required to improve its anti-corruption compliance program. A lot of improvements were already done in 2016. More details about what has been done, what was implemented, and what will be implemented is detailed in the financial release of the company. Moving to slide number 13, the investments of the company, we reduced it by around 20% from what we expected and what we really invested in 2016. An important portion of that, this reduction was due to FX effect. An important portion of the capex of the company are related to investment in US dollars, and when we accounted this in reais, this amount becomes lower. We also did some optimization and prioritization in terms of operational and strategic projects. Some strategic projects that were expected to happen in 2016 were kind of canceled or postponed. This led to a lower amount, lower final amount. For 2017, there should have an even greater reduction in total amount to be invested, mainly because we do not expect to make additional contribution to the Mexican project. Mexican project is ready, running, and as I said, as you were able to see, at very good operational rates. So because of that, no additional investment in Mexico, and the total investment expected for the year should be around 1.8 billion reais. Moving to slide number 14, it shows how we view the future in the petrochemical sector. And the future is very well predicted if you look at the global utilization rate. Beginning with the PE, we expect to have to see a reduction in the utilization rate due to the entrance or the new capacity We will start that in late 2017, beginning of 2018 in U.S., gas-based one. And this should, and these lower operational rates should put some pressure in the PE spreads in the international market. In terms of PP, we see some kind of some new capacity will be are entering in Asia, but will be absorbed. And U.S. no new greenfield project was announced to become operational in the short term. So we do not expect a contraction or an increase in the operational rate. So some level of stability. In terms of PVC, since no new capacity has been announced for quite a long time, the operational rate should improve very importantly in the following years, which should lead to higher spreads in the future. In the slide number 15, we brought here a new slide that shows how we see the scenario and how this would affect the three regions of geographics of Braskem, where Braskem acts. So in terms of volumes, domestic volumes in Brazil, 2017 should be better than 2016 because we expect an increase in the demand by around 2% this year, and we are coming from two very tough years. 2015, we had a decrease in demand around 7.5%. 2016, there was an additional contraction of 1%, so 2017 should be better. U.S. and Europe, we don't see much movement year over year, so the organic growth should continue in both regions, which is somehow positive. In Mexico, that's important. 2016, we have an average operational rate of 42%, but in the end of the year, we are getting very much close to around 90%. So we expect an important impact from additional volumes from the Mexican project. In Brazil, in terms of spreads, negative for PE, PP stable, and PVC and basic petrochemical positive. In U.S., PP should remain stable year over year. And in Mexico, the spreads, by definition, should be positive since we have a very positive feedstock agreement, which contemplates an important discount over the ethane that we consume in this complex. In terms of FX, that will negatively impact the results in Brazil. The reais got appreciated, and the cost in reais in Brazil got higher in U.S. dollars, so that's negative for the company. However, on the other hand, in Mexico, the Mexican peso got depreciated, so the Mexican cost, the cost in peso in Mexico get less relevant. So one thing should help to offset the other. So as a summary, the company is geographically diversified. We may face in 2007 movements and in different directions in terms of results. Tougher year for the Brazilian operations, some kind of stability in the U.S. and Europe, and a much positive year for Mexico. In terms of the strategic direction, in Brazil, we have to finish our flexibility project in Bahia, which would enable a portion of the company to be run using gas if needed. In U.S. and Europe, we have to stabilize the UTEC production, and we have a feasibility study for a new PP facility in U.S. And in Mexico, the goal of the year is to really stabilize the complex, run at its highest capacity possible, highest operational rate possible, and generate a lot of results for the company. The key consideration of the company, moving to the last slide, was one, productivity and competitiveness, so focus on operational and commercial efficiency, feedstock diversification, number two. So we aim in the future, sometime in the future, to have a more diversified feedstock in terms of 50% naphtha, 50% gas, and also have an even higher geographic diversification, expand our global presence outside of Brazil with and gaining scale in PE and PP. All of these three concentrations would be based in an important foundation for us, which is increase the reputation and governance, strengthening the image and its reputation, and the recognition of the company as a world leader and a national pride in Brazil. I thank you for hearing the presentation, and I turn to the Q&A session.
Thank you. The floor is now open for questions. If you have a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone at this or any time. If at any point your question is answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing the pound key. Questions will be taken in the order they are received. We do ask that when you pose your question that you pick up your handset to provide optimum sound quality. Please hold while you pull for questions. Our first question comes from Felipe Santos from JP Morgan.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Just some questions and follow-ups that didn't got so much clear in the conference in Portuguese. The first one is about the dividends. You mentioned in the call in Portuguese that the company is not considering paying extra dividends for this year, but in one of the answers, it was uncertain if you're going to raise this point with the board meetings at the end of April, and therefore you could have additional dividend being paid this year. This is the first question. The second, could you elaborate a bit on the spreads of EP and PE going forward? There are some market participants in the U.S. that believe that PP margins could be tightening further than what we are seeing in the first quarter, and therefore the margins would be lower than pretty much the rest of the industry is seeing. So could you elaborate a bit on that? And just a third question, just to be clear, in the 1.8 billion capex that the company is expecting for this year, and you're considering maintenance stoppage in the third quarter? Thank you.
Hi, Felipe. Just to make clear on the dividends, given the fact that we had a loss in 2016, we don't have profits to distribute as dividends. That's what I mentioned. As we progress during the year 2017, and we expect that the cash flow generation and results continues the course that we have seen in the last couple of years, we would then have a dialogue with the board on how to allocate this cash flow, respecting the guidelines around financial health of the company, especially around leverage, and the interest of the company of generating value in the long term through growth projects and or opportunities. So that was the, the comment I made is, based on 2016 results, which were a loss, no dividends, depending on how the results for 2017 progress, we will discuss with the board what to do. As far as the PP spreads, we see the impact that propylene going up more than anticipated in the couple of months, in December and February. We see this as a temporary phenomenon. This, in our view, is more driven by a combination of still healthy demand for propylene from multiple value chains, not only PP, combined with a slight tightening of supply given a coincidence of planned and unplanned shutdowns over there. So this expectation for 2016 of healthy spreads around what we saw in the second half of the year comes from that belief. I just wanted to highlight that 2016 was an extraordinary year as far as spreads and margins were concerned in the first half of the year, given a combination of very strong growth and tightening of the market in the U.S., which as the year progressed, the market players facilitated the imports of PP, which helped solve the supply of PP somehow and brought down the margins to still healthy, but lower than the first half of 16. As far as the CapEx is concerned, this CapEx includes maintenance turnarounds and operational investments, as well as some of the strategic investments that have been started in recent year, like, for example, the continuation of the investment of the project to create the flexibility to bring ethane into the Bahia cracker. So all of those activities are included in this number.
I see. Okay, perfect. Thanks so much.
Mr. Hassan Ahmed, Alembic Global Advisors, would like to make a question.
Hi, good afternoon. My question is, I guess, you know, you made some comments about sort of the near-term outlook on the polypropylene spread side of things. Had a sort of similar question on the polyethylene side of things. You know, as I take a look at the U.S. market, we obviously have some price increase announcements for February, followed by further price increase announcements for March. So my question, I guess, is a bit of a tricky one. You know, in your mind, what element of these price hikes are reliant on, call it a catch-up play with higher oil prices, or is it sort of anticipation of a relatively heavy turnaround season approaching, or is it the continuation of the robustness of polyethylene demand growth, or maybe a combination of all three?
Hello, Hassan. So, good question. So, let me address the PE side of the equation. We talked about PP in the previous question from Felipe. I think, as you said, the short-term expectation is an increase of prices. Players have announced relevant price increases for February and March. I think you mentioned three factors that are the ones I would mention, I think, and I think it's a combination of the three of them. First, oil prices are stabilizing at a slightly higher price than last year. And we have seen in the last few weeks the $56 of Brent, plus or minus $1, being very stable in that range, which puts the production cost of the marginal producer slightly higher. So this creates a base for the PE price to go up. Second, I think there is quite a surprising balance of supply and demand in China. The Chinese market has been pretty strong in general for both resins and petrochemicals, which pushes prices up. I think the local demand in the U.S., with the economy continuing to be strong, drives local demand, which helps push the U.S. price. And I mean, in the first quarter until April, typically we have a significant amount of turnarounds. So I would say it's a combination of all those in the short term. In the let's call it midterm, more back end of the year in 2018, we have the expectation of all the new projects coming online. As we have seen with our project in Mexico, those complexes do have quite long ramp-up processes until we reach stability. And some of the players in the U.S. have already started to mention expectation of delays of their startup process. So if you combine small delays in the startup with a softer, let's call it, ramp-up curve, there is a chance that the impact of this additional demand is a little bit less significant than anticipated before. It's going to depend a lot on the evolution of those startup processes and the local demand in the U.S., assuming that oil prices will stay in that range. If oil goes up or down, it will have a more significant impact on pricing of polyethylene.
Very fair. So now, you know, sort of continuing where you left off as a follow-up, you know, you sort of talked about sort of the near to medium term and, you know, the influx of all of this North American capacity. I mean, it seems to me that at least in the near term, there are two camps out there. You know, one side basically believes that the delays will not be that lengthy, and all of a sudden with one great thud, you know, all this capacity will start coming online, and you may get, at least in the near term, you know, a sloppy sort of market or some sort of a trough. But there seems to be quite a lot of convergence that once we are over this, call it hiccup, you know, there is a bit of a capacity addition vacuum, sort of medium to long term. You know, I mean, once all of these facilities come online, I think obviously because of the volatility that we've seen in oil prices over the last couple of years, no one really has come out with any further price plant announcements, right? So my question is that let's assume for a second that we go through a short-term period, you know, call it a year, whatever it may be, of a sloppy market, you know, some element of troughish conditions and the like. And let's assume further that that starts getting reflected in a variety of companies' valuations as well. So my question really is, you know, Braskem is a bit of a unique company with a unique history where you guys have indulged in both sort of building greenfield facilities as well as sort of going out and acquiring facilities as well. So what I'm trying to sort of get at is, let's assume that you have a sloppy market for a year and that's reflected in corporate valuations as well. You know, there are a bunch of sort of at least ethylene, polyethylene assets, or at least one or two that I can think of, that are up for sale. Presumably in that sort of a market, they get cheaper. Now, if that were to happen, would you indulge in M&A, or would you still want to sort of carry on with sort of cost-advantaged greenfield capacity additions?
Hassan, as you mentioned, our history has been very much built on successful acquisitions and integration of new assets into the system. So if the scenario described materialize, we will definitely be very interested in looking at the opportunities. Of course, each potential deal is a very specific situation. We would be looking at the valuation and our point of view about the future, but we also would be looking about our ability to integrate, improve the asset, and at the same time generate synergies, which has been something that we've done very successfully in the past. If you, for example, look at the results that we're generating with the assets in the U.S. and Europe, I believe this is a very clear example where the results of the acquisition have been outstanding. So we will be open to potential acquisitions, but always, as I described during the question that Felipe asked on dividends, considering the financial health of the company and the right leverage, the balance between short-term payout through dividends, the leverage, and growth. So if the right opportunity pops up, we will be interested in looking.
Very helpful. Thank you so much.
Mr. Caio Carvalhal from Brasil Plural would like to make a question.
Hi, good afternoon. I have two questions. One of them relates to the utilization ratio, and I would like to say more specifically the utilization ratio for ethylene and for PVC. In the case of ethylene, in the last few years, we've been seeing the utilization ratio at below 90%, while despite the issues at the beginning of 2016 and the maintenance stoppage at Bahia, we should see the full year closing at 92%. So my question would be, how should we see the utilization ratio for ethylene going forward? Are we likely to see the company up back to 95-96% or close to 90% again? And on what relates to PVC is more or less the same question. Utilization ratio at the fourth quarter was pretty high, close to 100%. So my question compared to something around 70-80% in the last few quarters. So my question would also be, how should we expect the PVC utilization ratio to perform over the next couple of quarters? The second question relates to the raw material, naphtha and ethylene. There was two big changes in the company's basic uses of material, the Mexico plant and also the 15% in the Bahia cracker, allowing for the utilization of ethane. So my question would be, considering the 15% being full used in Bahia and the Mexico at close to 100% ramp up, we saw 97% in December. So assuming Mexico is full ramp up, how is the share of naphtha and non-naphtha raw material in the total company? And also, how would be the naphtha participation in the cost, in the variable cost of the company? We knew in the past we usually model at something like 40-50% of the variable cost being driven by naphtha. But with this recent change, I would like to know how is the share of naphtha when compared to the ethane now? Thank you very much.
Okay, Caio. Let me address the utilization rate question first. For ethylene, we have been doing a series of improvements in all our operations through investments and process improvements that do not require investments towards increasing reliability and efficiency at the plant. So, this is a key contributor, which we expect that there's still potential for better results coming from the continuation of those efforts and the natural ramp up of the learning curves coming from some of those investments and new procedures. Second, in Rio de Janeiro, the Duque de Caxias complex has suffered over the years with lack of raw material, which in the recent months, it seems that the availability of ethane from the Petrobras system has increased significantly due to the pre-salt reserves and wells being becoming more operational. And this, we do expect that this increased availability of raw material will continue. The challenge going forward, to project going forward, has to do first with the market conditions. Second, with the continuation of strong supply by suppliers like the issue I mentioned in Rio de Janeiro for ethane. And third, the fact that, I mean, our crackers go through some very relevant turnaround. Next year, we have a very large turnaround in the Duque de Caxias complex, and this will impact significantly this year. This will impact significantly the utilization rate in the years where we have large turnaround. Having said that, our expectation is to continue to be operating above 90% in the upcoming years. On the PVC side, I would say we have the same impact of improvements that are being done from a process and capital point of view, generating better availability of products, combined with the fact that given the challenges of the local market, we started to develop export channels for PVC. And with that, we are now in a condition where if we really see the Brazilian market picking up, we would be able to sell a little bit more here, but also keep our exports. If you go back to this slide that has expected utilization rates around the world for PVC, we see this market improving. So this could generate more opportunity for us to export. I would say the tendency, the trend for the PVC utilization rate is to continue towards a better utilization rate globally and therefore for us as well. Talking about the raw material, if we project in 2016, we had 42% of the raw material in NAFTA, 33% propylene, 23% gas-based raw materials for our crackers, and 3% ethanol for our green ethylene complex. As we continue to grow and create more flexibility, we should see these numbers getting closer and closer to one-third NAFTA, one-third propylene, one-third gas-based ethylene cracking. It will depend on, as I said, next year with the large turnaround in Duque de Caxias, it will reduce the consumption of ethane, but at the same time, we will start to consume ethane in Bahia, and it will depend on how the timing of those activities happen. So I would say a third is a good proxy for the short-term, mid-term raw material mix. As far as the percent of variable cost, I think this will depend on your estimation of the price of the different raw materials. Today, we have NAFTA representing close to 40% of the total cost of goods sold for global operations. It will depend a lot on how you model price for those different molecules going forward.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mr. Pedro Medeiros from Citibank would like to make a question.
Okay, guys, thanks for taking the question. I actually have three questions in addition to those I asked on the Portuguese call. So the first one is related to the conversion of the cracker in Bahia to have flexibility of taking ethane for your ethylene production. I just wanted to understand if you can provide more color on the economics and on the proper timing for seeing that contribution to the results, okay, and whether will that impact your basic petrochemicals production from that site. On the economics part, okay, any potential guidance on the NAFTA to ethane spread that will make the project economically attractive would be very useful for us to build a forecast. My second question is related to your long-term five-year contract for NAFTA supply with Petrobras. Okay, I recall that in the last renewal of this contract, there were specific triggers embedded into the contract that allowed Braskem to revise the premium or discount purchasing terms, and that those triggers would start from the third year since the contract signature. So I'm assuming that one of these triggers is associated to crude oil prices or NAFTA prices itself. So, well, the question is if number one, this is correct, and number two, if the current oil price on the screen, assuming it would be sustained, gives you the right already to, well, basically negotiate new terms by the end of this year. And in addition, are there any provisions on these triggers associated to polyethylene prices by any chance? And my last question is more to understand your long-term strategy and options given the performance of some of your sites this year. So it's more of a provocative question on that sense. We are at the stage, very near the conclusion of the natural gas pipeline route number 3 from Petrobras, and the company is finishing the EPCI contract to conclude its gas processing plant that will make up for much more ethane to be available near Braskem's site. There is a new management team working at Petrobras to adjust and keep product prices attached to international parity, which in the past had been a restriction for Braskem to look for expanding. My question is there any evaluation to engage in a brownfield expansion of your ethane-based facility in Brazil, or like perhaps the negative outlook for global polyethylene prices at this point reduces that the priority list in spite of the potential feedstock availability opportunity? Those are my questions.
Okay, Pedro. Let me start with the use of ethane in Bahia. As we disclosed, this is an investment to create the flexibility to crack ethane. This will depend on the economics. We will be buying ethane in the U.S. at market price. There is a logistical cost to bring this ethane into Bahia. We have our estimates for that that make it an interesting option, but as any flexibility will depend on how the different pricing for the raw material goes. But an important aspect of this is that if we convert and use the flexibility, we will have a reduction in the availability of other petrochemicals that come from the cracking of naphtha. So it's not a simple comparison between naphtha price and ethane price. It embeds also the expectation for the other coat products that come from cracking naphtha. So it's a complex economics, which, as I said, creates the flexibility. As far as the process for the investment, we did a relevant part of the investments during the general turnaround that happened late last year. There are other investments now that are being completed, especially in the connection between the cracker and the port and at the facility at the port to receive the vessels that will bring the ethane. The expectation is that this investment will be finished by sometime in the second half of the year, so that we will probably commission that and be fully operational early next year or maybe late this year if everything goes smoothly from a investment point of view. On the NAFTA contract, you are correct that there are triggers that might lead to renewal of the conditions of the contract. This possibility happens in the third year of the contract. It's bilateral in the sense that both Braskem and Petrobras have this option. Those triggers are market-based, but we have not disclosed the specifics of that, and we do not intend to disclose the specifics of that as we consider those strategic information from a competitive point of view. As far as the third question on long-term strategy, the company is always looking for interesting opportunities for investment. A brownfield investment is typically a very interesting one because it typically leads to investment in dollars per ton of new capacity that is very competitive. So we have been looking for opportunities like that. But new investments in Brazil are dependent on three key conditions. First, we need to have the availability of the raw material and the comfort that this will be reliable in the long term to justify a relevant investment. Second, this raw material needs to be purchased at a competitive price. And third, we need to have the local demand to support the construction of any relevant expansion, because building a project in Brazil that would be 100% export focused would require a very significant discount to market prices, global market prices on the raw material. So we need to have demand in the local market that can take a relevant part of that new capacity. When we look at that, I would say that we have all the indications that in the mid-long term, Brazil will have the molecules, but those molecules are 300 kilometers into the sea. They need to be brought to the coast, which adds logistics cost. Then we need to build a plant, and then we need to serve local demand, which in the last few years has suffered a lot in Brazil from a resin's point of view. And we probably will go back to 2013/14 total volume in Brazil only by 2020. So in a 7-8 year period, we basically had no growth in demand. In that period, our operations in Brazil have improved significantly, as we discussed before, and we have increased our ability to produce. So that's why we're generating records in the export market, because we have more product and we can't sell them here in Brazil. So yes, we would be interested in looking at the brownfield opportunity, but we need those three conditions to be aligned so that the return makes sense for such a large investment. And we're continuously looking at those opportunities, not only here in Brazil, but as we mentioned before, we have a project being evaluated in the U.S. for a new PP line that does rely on those drivers. Availability of feedstock, advantage feedstock globally, local demand growth, and the ability to build this project in the sites which we are already present and therefore have a lot of synergy. So any condition where we have this, we will be pursuing. And when the engineering and feasibility studies are ready, we'll take those to the board for a decision to start investment.
Okay. No, perfect. Thank you so much, Fernando. And let me just make like a quick follow-up to the first part, the first question, actually, on the Bahia cracker conversion. So to understand what will like effectively take place, like how does your contract with Enterprise works? I'm trying to gauge if like it's a flat, you have flexibility, but eventually you're making the investment to run the cracker, share of the cracker on ethane anyway. So and the second part of that follow up is if, like looking at current pricing conditions, let's say for naphtha, ethane, and for your co-products on your basic petrochemicals chain, you would still have a profit, or you call for a profit on that conversion at this point, right?
So on the contract, we have, as is customary in this type of long-term contract, a series of mechanisms to manage the volumes on a month-to-month or year-to-year basis. So this is the first flexibility on the contract that enables us to be flexible in the take from the supplier. Second, we have a second cracker in Brazil that can take ethane, so we have the possibility to use the ethane molecule both in Bahia and in Rio de Janeiro. So this is a second flexibility that will be used, where in Rio de Janeiro, we're not substituting propane, naphtha. We are increasing the utilization rate of the complex, while in Bahia, we would be substituting naphtha. So this math will be done on a month-to-month, week-to-week basis to plan production. And last, our contract enables us to resell the ethane, which creates additional flexibility. So We believe the combination of the structure of the contract and the flexibility we have in our system, both in, that are being created in Bahia and that already exist to take more ethane in Rio de Janeiro, enable us to optimize the value that we can extract from these opportunities.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for the answers.
Mr. Frank McGann from Bank of America would like to make a question.
Hello, thank you. Just a quick question. In terms of your gas supply in Mexico, I was just wondering if you saw any issues there, given your concerns about declines in supply and where you stand in the pecking order for supply if there were to be shortages.
Frank, we have a very strong contract that was negotiated first after the auction that led to the decision of signing the contract and therefore building the complex, and then during the project finance negotiations with the banks asked for a series of improvements as far as risk mitigation is concerned from Pemex, which Pemex agreed upon. So from a contractual base, we have a very strong contract. From a supply situation in Mexico, we are in the stabilization process of our complex. Last year, we went through a ramp-up. December was a very strong production month. We started the year very strong. And as of today, we have not had any major problem with supply. We had what is typical in this type of supply-client relationship, small upsets on a day-to-day basis, just like we have in all our other plants with all our different suppliers, naphtha, ethane, propylene in the U.S. So we had the natural, normal level of operational support issues on a day-to-day basis, but no issue as far as the total amount of ethane. Looking forward, the Mexican market is facing a small shortage of ethane availability for the use of the overall industry. But given the strength of our contract, the reality has been so far that we had no problems. So my impression is that we're number one in the pecking order. But this is a decision done by Pemex. And, I mean, as I said, we have a very strong contract that has penalties and implications in the case of non-supply. So there's a strong deliver or pay clause embedded in the contract, which makes us both the contract and the recent experience, which is still new because we started the complex last year. But so far, so good. Even in a market situation where there is a shortage of ethane in the country.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mr. Vincent Vicente Falonga from Bank of America would like to make a question.
Hi, good afternoon, Fernando and Pedro. I have three very quick questions. First of all, how much Braskem expects, you know, the demand for resins to grow in Brazil for 2017? Would something between 0 and 5% make sense, or, you know, something between 5 to 10% be possible? Second question, this quarter Braskem had a very strong negative swing in working capital with a consumption of around 800 million reais. It seems to us it's related to the payment of taxes, but if it would be great if you could give a little bit more color on that front. And then lastly, on the acquisition of Cetrel, perhaps if you could give us, you know, a brief explanation behind the rationale of this acquisition. And also, we were wondering if the market will have access to some sort of evaluation report, and when could that be available to us? Thank you.
Hello, Vicente. Just to clarify, your first question was around the resins market in Brazil. It wasn't clear, sorry.
To see if you have any expectations of how much the demand for resins in Brazil okay. could grow in 2017.
So the 2016 was another year of decline in total demand in Brazil, minus 0.7%. Our expectation for 2017 is that we go back to a positive growth in the range of 2%, which is significantly higher than the expected GDP growth. But if you consider that in the last 3-4 years, the market basically declined by roughly anywhere between 8 and 10%, the 2% is still a first step towards going back to the level that we were seeing of demand back in 2013. We expect that this journey back to 2013-14 will take until the end of the decade, around 2020, for the Brazilian market to go back to this demand level. As far as the working capital variation, this is a consequence of managing the supply of the different contracts we have of raw materials and managing the better pricing versus terms. So this is something that is done continuously. And with the fluctuations we've seen in some of those contracts and the fact that we have different pricing mechanisms with the impact of foreign exchange rate impacting those decisions, sometimes it will lead to improving the EBITDA and the cost position, but with some implications on working capital consumption. This is part of the day-to-day business and very dependent on which contracts, the price level, the terms of each one of the contracts, the situations around the volumes on different contracts, which might create some short-term noise when you look at the numbers. As far as CETEL, the first I'm going to talk about the strategic logic and then talk about the any valuation numbers that we can disclose. This is an asset that Braskem used to be the controlling shareholder. In 2012, this asset was sold to Odebrecht Ambiental, which is a company that was created by Odebrecht, focused in this market of water treatment and residues treatment and waste management. We, at the time, decided to sell because the situation of Braskem from a balance sheet point of view and the challenges we had towards making our capital contribution to the Mexican project, combined with the fact that this buyer of the Brasil Ambiental is a very capable buyer with a lot of capabilities in that world, which have been proven right through the improvements they've done in the management of the asset, led to a decision to sell that asset. With the decision by Odebrecht to divest from this business and the decision to divest through a breakup of the business and selling the different pieces, CETEL was left as a standalone piece to be sold. We were informed about the process, given the relevance that this asset has for our operations in Bahia by the seller. And we started a dialogue with the board around the operational implications in the case that this asset would be managed by someone that is not an expert in the field. We started an evaluation to see if there were any players in Brazil that could bring the necessary skill set to act as the operator of CETEL. And our conclusion was that, one, it is a crucial asset from an operational point of view to the operation of the site. If it's well managed, we don't need to own it, but there is a huge risk that if we don't have the services that CETEL provides to us, it has huge implications to a site that is our largest complex and is one where we're doing a lot of investments to increase its value contribution to the system the flexibilization of ethane is a key indication of that. So the dialogue with the board led to the decision to for us to make an offer, and our offer was accepted for a series of reasons that we can go into details later if necessary. This acquisition requires a shareholder meeting approval. This obligation comes from the legal system in Brazil as related to public companies. And because of that, going to the second part of the question, there will be an evaluation done by us and an evaluation done by the seller available to the shareholders. Once we send the confirmation of an invite for the shareholder meeting. These evaluations are being finalized because they need to follow specific procedures according to the law. And as soon as we have them, we will set up the date for that and make those evaluations available to shareholders and to the public for consequence.
Thank you very much, Fernando. Very, very well explained. Thanks.
I'll turn over for the company for closing remarks.
I would like to thank all of you for participating in our call. As we discussed before, this was a very good year from an operational and financial point of view. This was also a year that a very relevant event, which led to the global settlement in December 21st, happened and impacted the company. But I'm glad that we're able to communicate to all our to the market and to our stakeholders that this global settlement did not impact the operations of the company and our ability to generate cash. So going forward, we will continue developing and executing on our strategy that has proven very successful, that is based on three key pillars: productivity and competitiveness at all our assets, diversification of our raw material base, and geographic diversification. 2016 is a clear illustration of the strength and positive impact of this strategy, and we'll continue to pursue that. But this will be done with an increased emphasis on governance, compliance, and reputation management, that the settlement, of course, had an impact on those aspects, and we'll continue to implement the activities that have been started last year by the board, through the creation of a board compliance committee, the hiring of an chief compliance officer from the market that reports directly to that committee. So this will be a priority going forward that we believe will help us reinforce our ability to continue to deliver on the strong results that we've seen so far. So once again, thank you for your questions. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you guys next quarter.
Thank you. This concludes today's Braskem's earnings conference call. You may disconnect your lines at this time.